Hey everybody, it's your buddy Mike Silva, and before we get started with another edition of the Talking Mets podcast, I wanted to come to you and let you know that during the show, the news came down about the Brandon Nimmo for Marcus Semien trade, and you'll get to hear, and it came down during the mailbag, as I was about to read a question from a fan about trading Nimmo, because that was a big conversation I know that a lot of people wanted to have, but, you know, essentially, you'll get to hear my reaction to the trade in real time. And instead of cutting everything out and starting over, I figured, okay, listen to the show, listen to my commentary, and then listen to me comment about the news. I thought it made for good radio. So I apologize for kind of how we had to pivot. And maybe as you listen, you're like, hey, Mike, this is dated information. We went stale. A first in the history of the Talking Mets. We went stale before I even put it up on the air. But sit back, relax, enjoy the show, get to hear a first in Talking Mets history, which is breaking news during the show. So thanks again for supporting the Talking Mets podcast, and let's get on to this week's edition of the Talking Mets podcast.
Well, the one thing David Stearns has not done as a head of baseball operations is spend heavily in free agency on starting pitching. And it worked for him a couple of years ago when they got Manaea and Severino on the one-year deals and both were really good. It did not work last year when Manaea was hurt. Frankie Montas now DFA'd. This is a strategy that, like long-term investments in starting pitching, can be risky. So what do you do now? I would expect that they're going to be active in trade talks for a starting pitcher for the starters who might be available, and there is not a clear picture yet on which ones are actually going to move. The teams that have Tarek Skubal and Freddy Peralta and Joe Ryan even have said, we're not all that interested in doing that. Some teams think they're posturing. We'll have to see as time goes by. So the Mets can do that. They also, I would expect, are going to sign a big starter this offseason. And David Stearns is going to go out of his comfort zone to do that, or out of what he has done in the past. They're going to be an interesting team to watch because obviously they have a ton of money invested in this team. They've got a huge free agent in Diaz, a huge free agent in Pete Alonso. And while both those guys are important, or at least what they do is important, if someone else can do it, great. Starting pitching is why they collapsed last year. That was the downfall of the Mets. They've got to address it.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, November the 23rd, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. And come to the new and improved website, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Check out the premium content for less than a cup of coffee a month, some free chat, interaction, all sorts of fun stuff. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. Welcome to a pre-Thanksgiving edition of the Talking Mets Podcast, one of those short weeks. I mean, and I think I've talked about it before, isn't it one of the more fun holiday weeks because everybody gets off for the most part? I mean, some of you guys working in the service industry, I don't know how you do it, whether you're delivering packages or whatever. But if you're somewhat, for most of us, you get that Friday off. So you get a three-day week, one of the shortest work weeks of the year. You know, have a great holiday, football, food, and, you know, hopefully you're not trying to leave early to go do some Black Friday deals or something. Although Black Friday kind of starts, what, after Halloween at this point? But what a fun week. And truthfully, I don't know if the hot stove will really start going till after Thanksgiving. I think post-Thanksgiving, leading into the winter meetings as they come up in about a week and a half after, is the barometer of when, you know, you've really had the GM meetings. The World Series is now far in our rearview mirror. You've had a chance to kind of look at the situation. Players have either, you know, opted out, accepted their qualifying offer, and you've had your tenders, you've had, you know, your 40-man roster set for now. And now it's about improving your ball club, and I think that you'll start to see the Mets, in particular, start to get aggressive, and some there'll be some crystallization of what's going to happen, particularly with Pete Alonso and Edwin Diaz after the Thanksgiving holiday. And, you know, I think that the theme of this show, as we talk about it today, is hot stove gossip, because this week was a week where there was a ton of it. Jeff Passan jumped in and threw a lot of names out there for the Mets to acquire, threw a lot of names that might be available, basically said the Mets are going to blow it up. There were rumors about Brandon Nimmo and the Mets trading Brandon Nimmo. There was suggested deals, whether it be John Harper of SNY, Evan Roberts throwing some rumors out there, Evan Roberts of WFAN, about trades for Brandon Nimmo. So we'll talk about that. Adam Ottavino, the former Met, threw a little stuff out there, a little gossip. We'll talk about that, about Carlos Mendoza and how they handle pitchers and some of the other things that he said on his show, his baseball and coffee, or coffee and baseball. I have to make sure I get that right, but does it matter? And then we'll round it out, looking at the mailbag, the chat room, seeing what's on your mind, and me addressing some of your thoughts here on this pre-Thanksgiving edition of the Talking Mets podcast. So let's get to it. And I always say this, and I'm going to say it again, and I'm going to remind everybody. This is one of the more fun times of the baseball season, in the sense where there's no games. It's all gossip. There's really no pressure of games. And sometimes the hot stove is a sport of in and of itself, where it's about winning the hot stove. It's about generating headlines. It's about selling tickets. It's about selling season tickets. So in a lot of ways, this is where the front office competes. This is the front office season. The front office competes from November 1st-ish till pitchers and catchers. And then, obviously, the games take precedence, and then the front office does their thing in the background. But now is where the front office takes front and center. And what's going to happen, especially in the age of social media, where there's so many different avenues to get information. And I think it's actually gotten condensed, where it used to be when there was forums out there, and then the old days of Mets blog, and at the height of rumors and gossip, where there was a lot more, I think, insiders, you know, with the industry guys retiring, guys getting out of the game. Your insiders have kind of been narrowed down to Heyman and Passan, maybe a little bit Morosi, Rosenthal, you know, Joel Sherman, I think, here locally does a really good job. I know that there are beat writers across the country that have more access than others. I think the beat has become more of an information arm. I don't really think that they're doing the insider information because, let's face it, I think teams don't leak as much as they used to. And if they do, it's strategic. I think a lot of the leaks come from agents. And I think a lot of the information you're getting is coming from speculation, industry gossip, maybe firsthand information from opposing teams, executives, scouts, what have you, which doesn't mean it's bad information. What it means is that it's very high-level educated speculation. And I think that's the key point. And I keep telling everybody, you can't drive yourself crazy with all this stuff. Just because the Mets, there's a rumor out on a Wednesday or a Tuesday that the Mets are going to pair Devin Williams up with Edwin Diaz, doesn't mean it's going to happen. And it doesn't mean it's likely to happen. It could have been an idea broached between Mets and the agent just to see the interest. It might be something they're thinking about. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. So you just got to calm down a little bit. Now, if you look at the Passan part of the week, it was a completely different vibe you got from Passan than maybe what you heard me say over the last month, what you heard from David Stearns out of the GM meetings, and for a good part of the early hot stove, what you've heard from the local media. There really hasn't been, outside of maybe floating Jeff McNeil and making him a trade candidate, the whole conversation has been threefold. Well, really twofold. One, can the Mets acquire an ace like Tarik Skubal, which seems very unlikely? B, are they going to re-sign Pete Alonso? And C, or B1, B2, re-sign Pete Alonso and re-sign Edwin Diaz? And I think time and time again, the more you hear about it, Pete Alonso and Edwin Diaz, from what it's been out there, are 1 and 1A on the Mets shopping list to rebuild this situation, to rebuild this roster. And then after that, things will happen. So when I hear that the Mets are going or available to trade Kodai Senga, Brandon Nimmo, very difficult, by the way, and we'll get to Nimmo in a separate segment, Brett Beatty, Mark Vientos, Luis Angel Acuna, Jeff McNeil, that is just common sense. I mean, these are names that not many players are untouchable anyway on the Mets, but these are names that obviously are going to be bandied about by other teams and are potential pieces that if the Mets want to get better, you know, whether it be bringing in a Brandon Donovan, whether it be bringing in a Ketel Marte, whether it be maybe being opportunistic and looking at another team star over highly paid, maybe a contract that doesn't age well that they want to get out from under, these are names that are going to come up. So that doesn't necessarily surprise me. Now, hearing the Mets getting linked possibly to Kyle Tucker and Kyle Schwarber, to me, that's more agent speak. I just don't see how either one of those, maybe Schwarber when it comes down to it, if Pete Alonso signs elsewhere. Tucker, I just don't see a fit. A year after they gave Soto a big contract, you could give another 10-year contract to a guy that has very good skill sets. But and in a lot of ways, when you combine and balance the offense and the defense, he's better than Soto. Not the same hitter than Soto. Not saying that. Soto's a top five hitter. Soto's a top 10 hitter all time. Kyle Tucker's not there yet. But when you combine offense and defense, you can make the argument that he may be better than Soto overall. But at this point, you know, he doesn't stay healthy, and it would be another large contract the Mets would have to throw out there. Bo Bichette, a name that we came up with. You know, maybe the Mets get involved as that being part of a second base situation. And, you know, look, we know that the Mets are going to try to upgrade the rotation. You heard that from Rosenthal on the way in. That's not common sense. I think not having a reunion with Ryan Helsley, that's common sense. And, you know, as far as Devin Williams and Diaz, I mean, look, I've been saying since the start of the offseason, it's in the Mets' best interest in that bullpen. And I know David Stearns, and I still get the vibe that David Stearns likes to play fungible chemistry experiment. And I'm not saying he doesn't value bullpen, but I think when he looks at his budget and he looks at what his front office and his lab and the value portion of the offseason, I think he believes he could do most of that in figuring out the bullpen. That's why I think if they bring back Diaz, who's essentially their Michael Jordan of closers, and I don't think that that's, you know, maybe that's an overstatement, but whatever you want to call it. I mean, to me, he's for the Mets anyway, they're Michael Jordan of closers. And then you surround that son with their with that universe, you would need to have somebody who could potentially be, you know, a 1B to Diaz. And Devin Williams certainly fits that. We've talked about that. So that doesn't surprise me. I've talked all, you know, maybe a Rozell Iglesias. I've talked all winter so far, or fall, about the need to do that. So that doesn't surprise me. Now, is Devin Williams the guy? Here's a guy that, according to NJ.com, and I believe it was Bob Clappish, don't quote me on that, there was some thought from the Milwaukee front office that when they traded Devin Williams to the Yankees, that he was not a fit for the Yankees. He was not a fit for New York. He obviously struggled. I know everybody, when I brought this up on social media, brought up his metrics, his advanced metrics. And here's the thing. That doesn't matter. When you are in an environment that you're not comfortable with, in a fishbowl, in a city that closers historically have been eaten up and spit out. Diaz is someone that knows a little bit about that. We've talked about how Diaz is one of those few options that have actually went through the gauntlet and come out the other side better, and is essentially a total 180 from his first year in New York. Now, maybe that's Devin Williams. I don't know. But, you know, when you hear front office personnel who know him well from Milwaukee question that, you have to give pause. Now, setting up in the eighth inning, different ball game, but hey, he blew one of the biggest games the Brewers have had in a long time with that Pete Alonso home run. So even in Milwaukee, not quite the fishbowl that is New York, you have to question what that situation with the temperature getting put up in big moments does for a player like that. So that was all I said. I'm not against the move. I just question if that is a fit for the market at that point. What do I think the Mets will do? Now, putting the gossip aside of the Evan Roberts saying that the Mets are looking at Mike Trout, the Jeff Passans, you know, Rosenthal stating the obvious, the Mets need pitching, you know, Heyman, you know, looking to throw some things out there. John Harper always likes to play GM, so does Sherman. These guys all like to throw things out there. That's part of their job, and it's part of what makes baseball and baseball hot stove fun. what do I realistically think is going to happen? And again, this is not sourced information. This is just me listening to Stearns, looking at the payroll, looking at the, you know, farm system, looking at where this team is at, and looking at the uncertainty of what the financial parameters of this game will be potentially in 24 months. Here's what I think they're going to do. I think they know they have to bring back Diaz. I know they want to bring back Pete. I think at this point, the only thing getting in the way of those two players, well, two things getting in the way of those two players coming back is, A, their desire to come back, and I believe both have a desire. Diaz, is much more so public than Pete, but I think Pete being a Met and being in New York, and it's been such a big part of his identity, I think that's important. But I think both players are going to say, hey, at this point in my career, this is my final shot at getting a big contract. I'm in my early 30s. I'm entering in my late prime. Any long-term deal will be my last big chance at a big deal in free agency, unless they become Benjamin Button all of a sudden. And they're going to make sure they get it. And if that means that the Baltimore Orioles give Pete a seven-year deal, and all of a sudden he says, and the Mets go, I'm not going there, he's going to be a Baltimore Oriole. And that doesn't bother me. He has every right to cash in on his hard work because the game is brutal. And you heard a little bit of this from Ottavino in his comments about how teams don't care about players' health. At the end of the day, players are commodities. And when the commodity isn't worth anything, yeah, there's a sentimentality and we all talk about it and we wax poetic about these players, but they are on the next bus out of town and the new hot thing comes in. And the fans are no different because David Wright used to be the hottest of hot with Mets fans and we all love him and his number was retired. But let's face it, we don't talk about David Wright or think about David Wright, nor do we want David Wright playing third base next year on opening day. He's yesterday's news. He's history. He's in the history books. So both these guys will be Mets unless another team decides to overpay. And then at that point, the Mets are going to have to say, do I match? And I think if the money's the same, they'll both come back. If the Mets are not comfortable, i.e. a seven-year deal for Pete or maybe a very non-deferred five-year deal for Diaz, then the Mets have a decision to make at that point. And it will be interesting whether they blink and whether or not they feel confident in plans B and C to pivot because it will be horrible. The fans will revolt on social media, and they'll get over it once the team starts winning. These are not, you know, look, I love Pete, I love Diaz. These are very damaging players to lose. But there is life after both of them. Remember that. I don't want to see life after both of them, and I don't want to have talk shows and, you know, play GM without them. But there is life without them, and the Mets know that. So there is a threshold. And this is business. I know everybody gets angry. I even saw some, I think it's some fan podcast talk about how they didn't like how Pete handled his free agency last year. And I'm like, what? I mean, we can't be personalizing. I mean, the fan is emotional. The fan connects with the player's emotional. The business side of baseball is not. Remember that. So, look, that's going to be 1 and 1A. I think the Mets offseason really doesn't get started until either one of those guys is figured out because how they are paid and how those contracts are structured, I think will provide a domino effect for the other moves they want to make with the starting pitching and what have you. I think the kids are going to get a chance. He talked too much about Beatty at third. He talked about Vientos. He even brought up Luis Angel Acuña. I noticed that I don't think he talked as well. He did bring up Mauricio. Mauricio is the toolsy guy. Maybe that's the guy that, you know, potentially gets traded. I don't think he's a guy that, again, for a second year in a row, unless, and he would probably, because he has options, start out at AAA. And I don't think they're going to give him away. I think playing every day at AAA would be in his best interest versus being a bench player. I don't think he really developed or he's ready for that kind of role. He may never be. He may be a player that needs reps. You know, obviously they're going to get a chance. Alvarez is going to get a chance to prove that he could stay healthy and become a middle of the order bat. I think they'll try to see if there's anything going on with Skubal or an Alcantara or a Joe Ryan. I think they're going to try to see what kind of pitcher or potential ace or emerging ace they could acquire. But they're not going to give away Tong. They're not going to give away Sproat. They're not going to give away McClain. I personally think McClain is pretty much untouchable. And I don't think that these big names, these big pitchers we've been talking about, are not going to, I don't believe they are going to be traded. So, and then we talked about Framber Valdez and Dylan Cease, and Valdez was one that has always been connected to the Mets. Apparently they didn't meet with him at the GM meetings. That's obviously not a good sign. I've heard Cease being connected to the Braves because it's his hometown, you know, something like 6 years, $200 million. I like Cease more on a shorter term opt-out deal, because I still have questions about him. I do like the swing and miss. I would like to see how the Mets could get a hold of him in the lab. I think Imai is going to be the guy that the more I kind of read the tea leaves, I just feel like the Mets are going to be in on him. And I think that's the kind of guy that they may, when you hear a Rosenthal talk, go out of their comfort zone and throw like a 7-year deal, maybe for like, you know, $25 million a year or something like that. Something crazy. And I know that after what Yamamoto did in the postseason and their failed pursuit of Yamamoto and their failed pursuit of Roki Sasaki and how the Japanese, and we had Jim Allen on just a week ago, how the Japanese market with Murakami and Okamoto and over the years, the hitters that have come over, it has become a viable market where you're not necessarily getting like it used to be where Hideo Nomo comes over and becomes a star because it's this circus show, like, oh my God, a Japanese player came over. And it's like anybody who comes over from Japan is like the next big thing because it's that one guy that got out. It's almost, you know, it's almost the baseball iron curtain, for lack of a better word. Now you have a lot of good players, not all Hall of Famers, good players. Look at the Yankees with Hideki Matsui, with Takahashi, you know, guys like that, you know, so on and so forth. Kuroda, they acquired him from the Tanaka. You know, the Yankees, you know, did what they did over the time. So it has become more mainstream. And it would be interesting because if your big pitching move is a Japanese import, and look, one that has been compared to Yamamoto, but will come over with similar high expectations. And let's be honest. I mean, he throws hard. He doesn't, you know, he's over the course of his career, he's worked on his walk rate. So he's got that down. He had a whip under one. He had a 1.92 ERA playing for the Cebu Lions. You know, struck out more than a batter an inning, almost 10 per nine. He's only 27. He's a couple of years older than Yamamoto was coming over. But I don't know if it'd be totally unfair. And let's remember, you talk about pressure. Here's a guy that's coming into a market where Senga has failed. The fans have a bad taste in their mouth with the last Japanese import. He's going to be compared to the guy that got away in Yamamoto. And he'll be asked to potentially, or looked at, even though this is unfair, anchor rotation that didn't give innings, a rotation that needs innings, a rotation that has Senga coming back, ? Manaea coming back, ? Clay Holmes, who established himself late, but who knows, a kid in Nolan McLean, a kid in Jonah Tong, Christian Scott coming back from injury, a kid in Brandon Sproat, David Peterson, who at this point, maybe as he morphs into his prime or late prime here, an innings-eating lefty, back of the rotation, guy give you 180 innings and about, you know, 6 innings, 3 runs. And that's nothing wrong with that, but nothing that would indicate top of the rotation. So you're bringing somebody in here, if this is the way they're going to go, that's going to be asked to do a lot, especially after what happened last year. So that's it's a bold move. And look, at the end of the day, that's why they pay Stearns big money. And you know, after the year the offseason he had, the year he had, the deadline he had, you know, that's part of the job, and it will be interesting how that plays out. But I think that that's how it's going to go. I think that that's kind of the direction. Kids are going to get a chance. Alonso and Diaz are going to be the priority. Imai will be a big part, I believe, of the pitching upgrade. I just got a feeling about that. And the Mets are very quiet. And look, if something goes sideways with either Diaz or Alonso, then it's going to take it in a different direction. I think there's going to be a trade market. I think they're going to try to upgrade second base. I don't think they're going to go big on center field. I really think that Tyrone Taylor, who just signed a contract, will be essentially the caddy to Carson Bench, who they really believe in. I think that, you know, we'll get to Nimmo in the next segment. Nimmo is a guy that maybe they would see if he would waive his no-trade clause, potentially to open up some salary to go in a different direction because of the, not because I think Nimmo is a bad player, he's certainly a very productive player, because of obviously the regression risk, and we'll get into that. But in general, I think that the fans who are looking for this team to all of a sudden be blown apart, kind of like what Passan did, and have all these changes, I mean, I just think it's going to be the two guys that have been here since 2019, Alonso and Diaz, coming back, and they will bring in imports around them, but I think Imai is going to be the big move right now. I think everything else will be nice moves, but I think you want to talk a big move, a splash. I think it's going to be the Japanese import. I think that's going to be the case. And I think the bullpen, there'll be some moves. But I think everything else around the team are going to be solid moves, potentially upgrade at second base, potentially bullpen and whatnot. But I don't think they're going to be the splashes that potentially are a Kyle Tucker or a Bichette or a Kyle Schwarber or things like that. So that's my opinion. It's not sourced. You may not like hearing that. That's just my gut of how they're going to go. And I'm okay with that because I think when you have the kind of farm system, when you have seven or eight players on the top 100 prospects, you have the liberty now to start to look at how you could incorporate, whether they're stars or not, your own cost-controlled, homegrown players into a sustainable winning product. Because since Cohen has taken over, they've had to go into each offseason and spend big money every offseason. And look, it's not just about big money for one free agent that you could add to the core. It's multiple free agents to fill multiple openings or areas of concern that honestly, some of them, like bullpen, should be done internally. The rotation, you should be able to fill out a couple of players at least adequately with internally. Second base is something that you should be able to develop something internally. Look, not every player is going to be a star that you bring up, but there should be more component to very good to near all-star or maybe all-star players coming out of this organization. And we'll see. You know, Nick Morabito is a component name that we talked about earlier this week on Beyond the Mic after he was added to the 40-man roster. That maybe he's a fourth outfielder. Maybe he's a guy that could sub in for 2 weeks. Maybe he becomes a component piece of the roster. But the Mets haven't done a good job with that. And you shouldn't have to go on the open market and spend $4, $5, $6, $7 million on a backup player because that's just not a good use of what honestly may become precious salary space when the if and when the league puts penalties on going above the tax that could, similar to the NBA, hamper your ability to upgrade the roster. So that's my feeling on the hot stove gossip. Just sit back. I think you enjoy the Thanksgiving holiday. I don't think a lot of news will come out. Watch, then, you know, Diaz will sign after I release this show. Or during this show, we'll have to do a breaking news. But other than, like, a Phil Maton who signed with the Cubs earlier this weekend, you know, maybe a few players here and there before Thanksgiving want to get their contracts in, I think it all heats up after Thanksgiving weekend, not the day after Thanksgiving, into December, into the winter meeting. So, look, remember, at this time last year, we were being captivated by the Juan Soto Derby, which was still a couple of weeks away from being solved. And we'll see what this offseason and this winter meetings bring. So, all right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Brandon Nimmo, is he declining? Is he done? Is he underappreciated? A lot of fans have had enough of him. They have concerns about him. I'm going to give you the most balanced take on Brandon Nimmo right after this.
Nimmo's home run, a three-run shot in the sixth, was his fifth of the year, the 115th of his career, and he slams this one to deep right field. Back goes Cruz, back to the wall, and it's out of here. A grand slam for Brandon Nimmo. 11-0 New York.
That's how you get fat.
What a day for Brandon. He's been struggling. We mentioned it since the 2024 All-Star break, a 190 average, a 590 OPS. He has turned that around in huge fashion with two big blows.
All right, we're back. So Brandon Nimmo's become a bit of a topic of conversation because occasionally it's been floated out there pretty much since maybe late in the season about the Mets looking to maybe deal him. Now, he's got a no-trade clause. So that's the first thing that you got to remember about Brandon Nimmo. He's got a no-trade clause. So with that, and he's not quite a 10-5 guy, he won't be for a couple of years, but the no-trade clause is something that he's, you know, going to have to prove anywhere he wants to go. Makes things complicated, limits the market, it limits the kind of deal the Mets can make. And I understand some of the rationale when you look at the Mets and you look at their offense and everybody wants Pete back and then you go around the diamond. Where are you really going to make a change where you could have an impact? The center field situation is kind of on hold until you figure out Benj. Yeah, second base, trading McNeil, we've talked about that. You're not going to be able to move on from Lindor. Third base is perhaps the other position, depending on whether you want to trade Beatty, move Beatty to second. What are you going to do with Beatty? Who knows? Do they decide if Pete goes elsewhere? Is Beatty, because he's a tall guy, you know, can he learn first base? Is that something they would think about? Who knows? Behind the plate, it's pretty settled there with Alvarez. So you go around the diamond, you know, Soto and Wright. You go around the diamond, there's not a lot of opportunities to change the look of the team. And after a disappointing 2025, not making the postseason, the way they didn't make the postseason, Nimmo's a guy that kind of is looked at as, hey, he's holding back change because he's got this no trade clause and he's not the same player that he was before. Now, that is true. He's not the same player that he used to be. And part of me doesn't like that. But the version of Brandon Nimmo that we've seen over the last couple of years, which is one that is more looking to drive the ball, hit home runs, driving runs, taking being more aggressive at the plate, not settling for walks, striking out more, middle of the order type of production that Nimmo has been more prone to, and streakiness. I mean, this past season, really had a good three-month stretch, started the season a little bit slow, ended the season slow. Is that part and parcel to his health? We know he's got herniations in his neck. We know he's got some lower extremity leg issues. He had a severe plantar fasciitis during the postseason. He hit like a pitcher in the second half of 24. He had about a .150, had a horrible second half in 2024, which is when some of the discontent of Nimmo started to come out. I think that we've seen over the last couple of years his bat speed become an issue. I understand that with those injuries that we just cited, with the bat speed situation that we talked about, you would start to be concerned with 5 years left and about $100 million, on average of $20.5 million a year, about a decline. But let's also remember, Nimmo is still a very productive player. Nimmo's a guy that, according to Fangraphs, his production, which essentially now, he's a 25 homer, 90 to 95 RBI, 250 batting average type of player with, okay, maybe not great metrics in the outfield, but he's passable in the corners. Can't play center field anymore. I wouldn't trust him there, especially every day, maybe in a pinch. That's a $24 million a year player. And if Nimmo was a free agent and on the market this offseason, maybe he doesn't get a five-year deal, but I'll tell you what, he probably gets a four-year deal, and he probably gets north of $20 million AAV from somebody. So it's actually a pretty good deal. Now, I know you're paying him until his late 30s, and you're scared to death that he's going to be able to, he's going to be a gimp, and he's going to walk off the field like Sanford and Son at some point. And I don't mean that disrespectfully. I'm just, saying that. I know sometimes people get crazy when you not trying to make fun of a handicap here at all, let me tell you that. But, I mean, he looks compromised at times in the outfield. But he's a guy that's a great clubhouse guy. He's certainly a leader. I know Ottavino brought up about the whole captain thing with Lindor. I think in a lot of ways, Nimmo's just as much of a leader, maybe even more of a captain in that clubhouse. He's a guy that's been a face, and truly a face of this franchise. Maybe not in the way of David Wright, because David was on a Hall of Fame trajectory. But Nimmo has been a conversation in this organization since 2011, since the early days of the Alderson regime. Think about it. He was the first draft pick that Alderson brought in when the Mets went into their money ball, or what I would say old school money ball era, because the league kind of passed them by very quickly when it came down to it with Nimmo. So he's been a topic of conversation. He was an elite run creator. I used to talk about it on this show all the time. Those who've been listening to this show for a long time, an elite run creator, when everybody else was calling him a fourth outfielder, I said, this guy is not a fourth outfielder. He just needs to get a chance. He needs to stay healthy. And since 2021, not only has he stayed healthy, he proved it. He parlayed that into an eight-year contract. Instead of making it a higher AAV, they spread it out. That's why you still have 5 years left on the deal. And now you're stuck with a player that, look, do I pine for the guy that was the patient hitter, the guy that didn't chase, the guy that was the typical money ball player, high on base percentage, some power, got on base at a high rate, maybe didn't, similar to John Olerud, never swung at a bad pitch, versus the guy who chases a little bit more, strikes out more, is sacrificing some of that for power and run production. Maybe the former is the one I like, not the latter. All of this, by the way, has happened. And if you look at his advanced metrics on Baseball Savant, all of this has happened since Stearns came to the organization. And remember, this is not, you know, you want to blame Stearns. It's his team. It's his organization. That's correct. But they want guys who hit the ball hard, launch the ball, and it's exit velo. I don't hear a lot of talk about working the count per se. It seems like they've worked away from that. The work, it seems like it's about hitting the ball hard, finding your pitch and going after it and hitting it hard and lifting it. And that's kind of like Nimmo's symptomatic of maybe the shift in what analytics used to want out of an offensive player versus what they want out of a player now. Again, that's just me gleaming information. We've had Ernie Dove on. We've read about the Mets organization philosophy. You know, the whole league has focused on exit velocity when it comes to hard hit rate. I think the chase that Nimmo has started to be subjected to is, you know, obviously concerning. There are some things about his game, his defense, his base running. He's seen a bit of a decline. The guy's got, lower half is starting to be compromised. And look, that's not surprising. He has played since 2022. He was injured in 2021. He had hamstring injury. He only played 92 games that year. He played 151 games in 2022, 152 games in 23, 151 in 2024. And last year at age 32, coming off that plantar fasciitis, knowing he has those herniations in his neck, he played in 155 games. Now, do I miss the 5-4-5 WAR player that he was in 22 and 23? Sure. A lot of times this WAR when it is valued on, you know, the times on base. The Mets view him more as, okay, your value is driving in runs and being a middle of the order hitter and being a good clubhouse guy, being a model citizen, and a guy that pretty much is the guy on this roster. Not Lindor, who is an import, not Soto, who's an import. And sure, Pete is also Mr. Met, bleeds orange and blue, but Nimmo's been here a hell of a lot longer than Pete. And he's also been through a different gauntlet than Pete. He was a guy that was a number one draft pick, first draft pick of the organization, had his struggles in the minors, was traded. A lot of people don't realize, was traded for Jay Bruce. And then because he failed the physical, I don't know if it was his knee or whatever, they rescinded it and they put Dilson Herrera in. Think about that. Think about how that trade, which wasn't a bad trade, Jay Bruce was a good Met, and the Mets gave a very little for him. Think about how bad that trade would have become if Nimmo would have was doing all this for the Reds all these years. Because that's what would have happened. Because at that point, everybody thought, myself included, the guy's a fourth outfielder. Because he didn't hit for a lot of power. He was an on-base guy. He didn't have eye-popping numbers in the minors. And look at that. Look at how that all turned out. And he, you know, right away, since the age of 24 in 2017, when he got a shot, he's proven time and time again that he is a core offensive player. Now, there are some rumors out there, and I think it's just kind of laughable. You know, John Harper, and I give him credit for creativity, talking about trading Nimmo to the Texas Rangers for Corey Seager. Now, Seager's got a big contract still be paid out. An average of about $31.5 million a year from 2026 to 2031. 6 years. 6 years. So he's owed $180 million for the next 6 years. And you want to know, you talk about Nimmo declining in injury. And I know the metrics on, you know, Seager, and also to a certain degree, Mike Trout was the other name that got thrown around this week. The advanced metrics on Baseball Savant are not horrible. But let me give you the list since August of this year, going back, of the injuries that Seager has had throughout his career. Appendectomy, okay, that's kind of a freak thing. Hamstring, hamstring, hip, wrist, hamstring, hamstring, thumb, hamstring, arm, leg, hand, lower back, left quad, hamstring, hamstring, elbow, hip, right UCL sprain, out for the season back in 2018. That's a pretty long list. You think that's going to get better as he heads into his late prime in his 30s? A lot of hamstring on that. Mike Trout, okay, he had a skin infection in September. And some kind of illness in August. Who knows? Maybe that was, you know, the flu or something. But let's go back. Knee, meniscus, hand, foot, back. Left groin tightness, hand, calf, elbow, foot, toe, calf, foot. So lower extremity, nothing worse for a hitter than lower extremity injuries. Serious ones with the hand, serious ones with the foot, elbow, all that stuff. And look, Corey Seager had a great offensive year. Don't get me wrong. I mean, in just 102 games, He had a 151 OPS. He hit 271. He had 21 home runs, 50 RBIs. He's a guy that get 30, 35 home runs. You move him to third base. Maybe it's better because his range at short isn't great. Maybe it's better, for him. It's kind of like what they were going to do with Carlos Correa. But he hasn't played 150 games since 2022. And his career, he's only played over 150 games twice since he came up in 2015. When we watched him as a kid when the Mets beat the Dodgers in the division series. And then Trout owed $37 million over the next 5 years. Okay, even if there's a $17 million difference for Trout, there's an $11 million difference in salary for Sager. So obviously there'd have to be some kind of financial balancing of balance sheet. You know, maybe the Mets send a player the other way and then eat some money. Maybe they even it out with, a pitcher like, a Senga or a Manaea if they want to get out from the years of the contract with Anaheim. And, look, Trout is Mike Trout. Is he a Hall of Famer? I wonder if his decline since age of 27, it probably doesn't hurt his Hall of Fame case because there's so many writers that saw him play when he was Aaron Judge, basically. He was the best player in baseball. This was Aaron Judge before Aaron Judge. So I don't think it's hurt him. But he's got 400-plus home runs. He's probably going to hang on and hit 500-plus home runs. He's a Hall of Famer. But the resume or the final results won't be as sexy because since the age of 27, he's pretty much been hurt. And if you think a guy like this with those kind of serious injuries, you think Sager's an injury risk. I mean, hamstrings, that's, a problem. He's got, I think it was a Hammett injury, foot, like so many overfoot. I mean, you could have yourself a very expensive Hall of Fame hood ornament basically taking time on the injured list. These are the kind of moves because of, these are the kind of moves talked about in the offseason when you don't have a lot to talk about. So I understand that. But making these kind of moves for these kind of players is exactly how you win an offseason and you generate conversation and clicks and vibes in the offseason and you lose in June. Because either the players are hurt for extended periods, they underperform because they're compromised, or they never get off the mat. Not that they're going to be Jed Lowry, but you get where I'm going. And by the way, you're sending the other way a productive player. Yes, a player that has some red flags, still hits the ball hard, still is productive. Maybe he doesn't run as fast. Maybe his defense has taken a step back. That happens to a lot of players. Just because you've taken a step back doesn't mean you can't play defense. He is passable in the outfield. Do you want to maybe make a defensive replacement late on him? Yeah, maybe. Is he a DH probably in 2 years, 2.5 years? I understand that thought process. I know with Pete potentially coming back, you may have him with Soto, a few guys that are DH. That's why you want to rotate the DH spot. That's why it's important where if you bring in a Kyle Schwarber for the next 4 years, this is why these moves, when we talk about them in the offseason, they're not in a vacuum. You have to think about the big picture. Where a guy like Vientos, if he can improve enough to be where he was in 24, passable at third base, and maybe learn how to play first adequately, then you could move people around. You could use the DH spot as a rotation situation where maybe Vientos is your full-time DH, but you move it around. The Mets have never really had a DH-only guy since the DH was adopted in the National League in 2022. So I understand the desire to change the chairs on the deck here. I get it. I get the people familiarity breeds contempt. I get that. But Brandon Nimmo is not your enemy. Brandon Nimmo is not your problem on this team. Brandon Nimmo, from an offensive standpoint, from a clubhouse standpoint. Now, do you listen? If Brandon says, look, I'm willing to go here, here, and here, wherever those three places are. Do you listen and say, okay, let me see what's out there? Absolutely. It goes back to the whole passing thing. Of course the Mets are going to listen on Senga. Of course the Mets are going to listen on Beatty. Of course the Mets are going to listen on Vientos. The Mets will probably listen on anybody except for Soto. And Lindor, maybe they would, but I don't know how that would work. That's just being a good executive. But I think we focus too much on what Nimmo may be when in front of us, there's not enough information that says he is a shoo-in to decline. He's going to decline. Everybody declines. The bat speed, I know, is a little bit of a concern. That I agree. But even at some point earlier this year, Soto's bat speed declined. And we don't know, you know, maybe part of the problem is, and this is where depth comes into play, and I go back to Morabito and some of these kids that you could develop, having the ability to maybe have a better bench. You know, maybe the guy should be playing 155 games. Maybe I know that part of that is the player, and I know Nimmo's a guy that likes to play through slumps. He likes to play through his slumps, from what I understand. Maybe he's a guy that should be playing 130 games a year, like Starling Marte was. Maybe less. You get a right-handed compliment against a tough lefty. You know, I know he hits lefties, so I'm not saying he has to sit against lefties, but maybe against certain matchups, maybe tough lefty, maybe day game after night game, maybe you're on a road trip, and it's really, you know, it's the middle of July, it's really hot, and you're like, hey, maybe he needs to blow today. You know, you played Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN on Sunday and got out there, you know, 11:30, didn't land until 4 a.m., give him Monday off. Maybe that. And when these are things that the Mets could do. I'm sure the Mets have their, you know, sleep studies, their rest studies, with all the data they have. Now, player wants to play, player's productive, the manager believes in the player, though those studies go by the wayside. But, you know, that to me is a whole separate story. So, Brandon Nimmo, don't see him being traded. This whole, like, oh, Mike Trout for Brandon Nimmo rumor and, you know, the speculation on whether they could trade him for Corey Sager, move Sager to third base, it's just mental bubblegum for the offseason. Nothing wrong with it. Those are moves that are doomed to give you agita in the long run. Those are back page moves. Those are winning the offseason moves. Those are not good baseball moves. And I don't know what kind of deal for Brandon Nimmo, other than dumping his salary and not being on the hook for anything and then reinvesting that in, okay, now you want to go after Kyle Tucker. Now you want to go after and reinvest that money in a Bo Bichette or, you know, something else. Make a trade for Ketel Marte. I'm just throwing names out there. Okay, have a plan, though, because you just let a productive player walk out the door. And a popular player and a good player and a clubhouse leader walk out that door. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Adam Ottavino had a lot to say about how the Mets handle their pitchers, Carlos Mendoza, David Stearns, and more. We'll talk about that right after this.
And then this is the other issue, and this is something that really upsets me deep in my soul because, man, I've talked with every single one of these guys about having to take control over their own career because the team is not going to keep them healthy. They need to find a way to keep themselves healthy. McGill goes down. Garrett goes down. Kranick goes down. Daniel Nunez goes down. Danny Young goes down. All Tommy Johns, not to mention Drew Smith. Rarely had a Tommy John. It's just too many injuries. So they have to figure out something, whether it's their protocols, whether it's the way Carlos uses these dudes, you know, so haphazardly, you know, whether they even care about keeping their guys healthy or not, but they need to be better than this. This is embarrassing. This is actually pathetic. Like, pathetic. I would have never let this happen if I was on the team last year. At least half these guys wouldn't have blown out. I would have protected these dudes myself. I would have had to jump in front of them myself. Fortunately, there was nobody willing to stand up and talk to Carlos this year. That was just me, I guess. So a little bit of an issue there. And if they continue down this path, they're going to be F-U-C-K-E-D because you cannot injure this many dudes every year. And it's hopefully this is not an actual strategy because it's pathetic and it's not player friendly. And eventually people will catch on. And what's funny is they were bragging about how good they were at keeping people healthy the year before when it had nothing to do with them. So, yeah, I'm a little annoyed because these are guys that should be playing. So it pisses me off.
All right, we're back. So you heard a snippet of Adam Ottavino's comments on his Baseball and Coffee YouTube show where he was going through all the National League East. And when he came to the Mets, he spent a lot of time there, obviously, even though he wasn't part of the team last year. He still knows the guys. He was a big part of the Mets for about 3 years. Under Buck Showalter, when they won 101 games, he was lights out as a setup guy for Edwin Diaz. Had one of his best seasons with his command and control under Jeremy Hefner. And, you know, as time went on, as he got closer and closer to the age of 40, he became less of an important part of that bullpen. And it sounds like he didn't have the greatest experience in 24 during the summer of love of OMG and Grimace. And what's funny is that we hear about how the vibes on that Mets team were great, and they were. But sometimes when you start to hear players talk, just like any other job, not everybody's 100% happy with their role or potentially with how they're treated or how they're communicated to. And it gives you a different perspective than the fans would have on the outside looking in. Because a baseball team and the interaction with the baseball team are a lot more than OMG song with Jose Iglesias or a purple cartoon character. And in a lot of ways, you know, that team, their legacy and how they're remembered by Mets fans is really 3 or 4 weeks from the end of September till late October, when they went on this great run, when the ball landed over the wall in Atlanta, or else they may not be remembered the same way. And like I always said, there's a thin line between 24 and 25 when it comes to how the Mets are viewed, because the 24 team won some big games down the stretch in September and the 25 team did not. But the point here is, so Ottavino goes on and had a lot to say, and I think it got a reaction from the Metaverse, or the Mets universe, or whatever you want to call it. I can't say the Metaverse because I guess that's Facebook, but the Mets universe. And I think the big premise of teams not wanting to keep pitchers healthy, and how Ottavino spoke to pitchers about making sure they take ownership in their own health, and how he, I guess, had conversations, it sounds like, with the front office, not the front office, but with Carlos Mendoza, about how he may have used or abused or overused some relievers, and how there wasn't that person potentially there to stand up for the players who, and it's not just about when they were getting into the games. I mean, we don't have access to this unless you're charting the game at home or want to go back, but it's how many times they got hot, warmed up, how many warm-up pitchers. These are things that all play into what Ottavino was talking about. But I can assure you, in talking to players over the years, and I tell you a story. I knew a player many years ago who played under Terry Collins, and he got hot. I think the number he gave me was either 110 between coming into the game and getting hot, which means you're ready to come in. So you're throwing with some kind of effort. Your body doesn't care that it's not competitive pitches that count. The body just feels the pitches. I think he got hot 110, 112, maybe 115 out of 162 games. I mean, I'm not saying the guy went two or three innings every time he went out. He may have went a batter or two or an inning, but still, there's a lot of throwing there. And then sometimes there's multiple ups and downs. And Ottavino was right, and I think every player, and this is the dilemma that players have, when you're an employee, especially when you're young and when you're optionable, and you also not a key or core player. Sometimes relievers tend to be the guys that in the back of their head, they're like, hey, I'm disposable. Because a lot of times, if you're not Edwin Diaz, you are, you will do whatever the organization says because you're afraid if you don't, you'll get sent down, released. And by the way, baseball is a closed club. If you get the reputation of not wanting to take the ball or being somebody that's less than enthusiastic about handling workload, they will punish you and potentially you won't have a job. That's always in the back of these players' heads. Now, some of that's irrational, but it's human nature. And despite the fact that it's a fabulous lifestyle and you can make tons of money, and the league minimum is $750,000, there's some of you in the audience that are like, oh my God, I'll never sniff that kind of money. And I get it. It's a lot of money. But by the way, if I gave you $750,000 now and said, here, that's it. You get it for 1 year and you have no job prospects after that, or you have to be unemployed and figure out your life after. After taxes, it's not as much money as you'd think. You're a regular guy. And sure, if you do 5 or 6 years of that, you could put a nice little nest egg. Are you rich? I wouldn't consider you rich, not by today's standards. So there's all this anxiety about making a living. At the end of the day, these guys don't make a lot of money in the minors. They're never going to make money in the minors. There's just no way to pay them a livable wage in the minors, a livable wage by the standpoint of what, you know, an office or blue collar or white collar person will make to live. I guess I'm talking from an East Coast, New York, Long Island perspective. A lot of money. You need, look, let's face it, you live in some states, you probably need a couple $100,000 a year just to live comfortably. I mean, that might sound crazy to somebody in the audience, but it's true. And, you know, these guys going down and making $100,000 playing in the minor leagues, it ain't cutting the mustard. And by the way, you're away from your family. So when Adam Ottavino's talking about these concepts about players staying healthy and, you know, protecting them, I get it because I've heard players talk about it. So, you know, I think part of the Mets' problem with overuse of bullpen is perhaps the, and I don't agree with the shuttling. The shuttling is a thing that in a modern era of general managers, it's like a fantasy baseball thing. You know, like my fantasy football team, I have spots on my roster that, you know, unless I settle in and somebody really stands out, I'll shuttle guys every week. Oh, yeah, this guy didn't work out. Let me try this guy. This guy didn't work out. Let me try this guy. Maybe you do it on your fantasy baseball team, whatever you're doing. And those are not real people. Those are real people, but on your fantasy team, they're not packing themselves up. And one day they're in Syracuse. The next day they're at Citi Field. The third day they're playing in Scranton Wilkes-Barre for the Syracuse team again. And they're just going around and around and around. And I think that if you're a player and you sign with the Mets, you have to start to wonder, am I going to be on that shuttle? And you may not sign with the Mets. So that could have repercussions. But there's the human element. And I agree with Ottavino. I think that human element may be lacking when it comes particularly to the bullpen with the organization. So I understand that. Now, if the Mets, and the real issue with the Mets, and he goes back to 24, is that offensively, they haven't really figured out with their lineup and their depth of their lineup because they've had so many guys trying to figure things out, particularly the young players. And we talked about it this year. The young players having such a rough time early left gaps in the offense where they played a ton of close games. That's why guys like Max Kranick were used so much earlier in the year because the starters didn't go deep. Okay, you want to blame Stearns for that because of the kind of pitchers he brought in? Fine. You know, did he probably believe it was going to be like that? Did Mendoza believe it was going to be like that all year? He probably figured after about a month, 6 weeks, maybe by Memorial Day, they would start to get into a groove and you'd start to see Senga go 6 or 7 innings and Clay Holmes could have, you know, have his pitch count, extended. Manaea would be back. You know, these things didn't happen. So they kept going to the well. They kept going to Brazenbone. They kept going to Kranick. And maybe that contributed to some of their struggles. I'm sure it did, because we don't even count the times they got hot. But I will tell you, someone like Edwin Diaz, I don't see them overuse him or abuse him. Now, do they abuse a Max Kranick? Do they abuse a Oscar Brazenbone? Do they abuse a Reed Garrett? Do they abuse maybe a Daniel Nunez? Look, I'm going to be honest with you guys, and I know this talking to players, that if you're not a blue chip, you know, high investment player, sometimes, you know, like a Ryan Stanek, they're going to just throw him out there and not give a you-know-what about his arm because they're trying to win ball games. Because, by the way, the guy in the manager's seat has to worry about his livelihood, has to worry about his salary, has to worry about his job security. Everybody's kind of like, and this is the thing about baseball, everybody's selfish in baseball. Baseball's the one sport where you could be selfish, and in the course of being selfish, you're actually contributing to the team winning. Now, that doesn't mean you don't do the things like move runners over or situationally hit. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about focus on you and you alone. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Because in the focus of you and you alone, you're actually helping, in the nature of the sport, the team be better. In basketball, that doesn't work. In hockey, that doesn't work. To a certain degree in the NFL, that may not work. Now, in the bullpen, I think that's the part of the roster that gets hit the most. And I've said this, a good manager is boiled down to a few things. I've talked about it time and time again. Managing the media, managing the front office, managing the clubhouse. None of that is X's and O's, by the way. And then managing your bullpen, that's where the X's and O's come in. Now, did they mismanage their pitching staff? I think that's why Jeremy Hefner got fired. And I heard Trevor May talk a little bit about this on his show. I think Hefner was the driver on a lot of who to get up, who not to. I think he's the one. And in a lot of ways, like an offensive coordinator in football, I think Hefner was pretty much the pitching coordinator. And I think the way the teams act now, because the manager has so much on their plate with prep, with front office interaction, with media stuff, with personnel interactions, that you have to delegate. I mean, you have all these freaking coaches on the staff now, quality control this, multiple hitting coaches, infield coach, assistant this, bench coach. Like, at some point, it's not like the old days where it's Billy Martin's drinking buddy. And, you know, so to me, I understand what Ottavino was saying. I don't have a problem with him saying it. He has to suffer the consequences with his buddies. He has to face Nimmo in the locker room where... Well, not in the locker room. Well, if he goes in the locker room, if he covers the game, or if he gets a text from Nimmo and Lindor and say, what the F? What did you say? Why did you break the code of conduct, the baseball code about the clubhouse? Maybe the kids, maybe a Reed Garrett, maybe some of the guys that were in the bullpen said thank you, putting it out there. Now, you know, his whole thing about bedside manner and communication, those are somewhat problematic. He talked about Mendoza's bedside manner. Bad bedside manner could be being blunt and direct with people. I see Mendoza as a blunt, no-nonsense guy. I don't see him mincing words. At least that's not the way I see him in the press conferences. I haven't interacted with him. Maybe it's a conversation we have with one of the beat guys at some point before the winner's out and talk to him a little bit about this. I don't have too much about that. Stearns is not a great communicator. He may not have been a great communicator to Ottavino. By the way, Ottavino didn't have to come back and play under Stearns. He came back in 2024. He was a free agent. He opted out, I believe, in that second year or whatever it may be. Or the option wasn't picked up. It was a player option. I can't remember. But he came back. And maybe he thought he was going to be a bigger part of the bullpen. I know a lot of fans are like, well, he's bitter about the way things ended. Maybe. But he's being honest. There's nothing wrong with being honest. I mean, what bothers me about media today and about fans today, and please don't take offense because I know sometimes I get myself in hot water, is you say you want something different. You say you want original content. You say you want brutal honesty. But then when you get it, you don't like it. I'm as big of an example of that because sometimes I say things that are my brutal honest opinion and they're not part of the hive mindset of what you have with everybody here who wants to create a club to get clicks and likes and go to ball games and hang out in the outfield with orange shirts. And I don't care about any of that stuff. I don't care if I ever step foot in Citi Field on any kind of event because that's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to provide a good product for you, and I can do that, and I don't have to compromise myself by saying or believing things that I don't believe. Why do you think that I'm not part of the Queens Baseball Convention? Because I don't subscribe to the groupthink. And I never will. Even when I've had sponsors. That's the way it goes. That's the way I do this thing. Has it held me back? Maybe. And I appreciate Ottavino putting this out there. And is he doing it because he wants to get attention? Maybe. If this is his brand, if he's going to be a guy who's a current player that just retired that could provide a great insight into players that he played with at least for the next 5 years, hell, that's a hell of a lot better than what I hear from Derek Jeter on those Fox broadcasts or the agent speak I get from some of the national writers sometimes. And I mean, this whole thing, there was too much pressure on pitchers to play even when they felt a little compromised. Hell, that's baseball. You're trying to win a championship. Pressure is part of the deal. If you couldn't play, don't play. But it goes back to what I said. Sometimes then they're in the back of their head, they're like, well, I'll get blackballed. Well, that's the risk you got to take. When you're in this market and you're playing for a championship and you have to win, these are the kind of things that are part of the price of doing business. This is what makes you rich. This is what gets you a contract. Playing hurt. By the way, there's a lot of you in the audience that probably don't have any sympathy for these guys because tomorrow when you get in that car or on that train or on that bus and you're feeling like you know what and you don't want to be there on a Monday going to work or you have a cold or you're feeling under the weather or you had a shitty weekend, you're doing it because you got to pay the bills. And guess what? They're doing the same thing. And I'm sorry. Look, I appreciate Ottavino's honesty. That doesn't mean I agree with it. Do I think the pitchers were abused? I think all bullpens across the sport are abused because the starters don't go deep enough. I think they throw too hard. I think they put too much spin on the ball. They're trying to throw wiffle balls up there. I think the human body's not meant to throw an average. I mean, the league average in velo is 95 miles an hour. Look at these vertical spins on that. Everybody's putting a tremendous amount of strain on their elbow and shoulder, and they're going to have to get up. If they only come in two or three times in a 7 day week, they're probably getting up another one or two times. They're probably throwing the ball 5 out of 7 days. Inevitably, you're going to get hurt. That's every team. I'm sorry, Adam. Maybe as the game became more fantasy baseball toward the end of his career, he saw more of it versus early in his career. Until the pitchers, the starters start going deeper, you're not going to be able to manage that bullpen much better. I do not see a bullpen management issue with Mendoza. Maybe make some quirky moves. I think he's trying to win. And I think Stearns is trying to win. I think it's part of the market. I think it's part of being part of the New York Mets under Steve Cohen. I think it's part of the media scrutiny. I think it's just part of the price of being here. I don't agree with the opener. I don't agree with the shuttle. I don't agree that he should be value shopping on the bullpen where, you know, you're throwing guys up like rag dolls all the time. I think from a human element, it stinks. I think from a baseball component, it stinks. Is there something the league could do about it? They may be able to make some rules where, you know, when a guy comes up, he's got to stay up for, you know, for a certain amount of time and not be sent down. Maybe that's part of the next CBA. Then all of a sudden it'll change. But part of that also is you're going to have to expand the roster because you're not going to have enough arms. And guess what? That's why you got a shortstop pitching in a 10-2 game that becomes a 16-2 game, which personally to me is disrespectful to a fan that might be paying $250 a seat to go to that game, plus parking, plus food, and all that other stuff. Now, I know I got off on a tangent here because of Ottavino's comments, but I think Ottavino's comments are worth examining. Not whether why he said it or should he have said it. I'm offended he threw his former teammates in the bus. He's a media guy now. He's not in that clubhouse. He's not going back. He's done. Oh, you know, he must not have got hired by SMY. Who cares? And do I think that they have to re-examine all this, the Mets? Well, why do you think they changed all their coaches? Why do you think that Jerry Willard is here? Justin Willard. And one of the things before Thanksgiving, because we are going to take a couple of days off for Thanksgiving on Beyond the Mic, that I'll do at Beyond the Mic, is Justin Willard was on a podcast. I'm going to listen to Justin Willard talk. I'm going to do some research on Justin Willard, and maybe we'll do a short Beyond the Mic about Justin Willard and get a little our take and see what potentially we could glean from that. That's why they have a new pitching coach. This is probably why Hefner got fired. Are you surprised? Stern said in his post-mortem after the season, need to look at how the coaches support the players. It was a big part of his 2025 analysis. He made good on that promise. Is it enough? We'll see. So, you know, to me, none of that stuff is surprising, so to speak. You know, maybe some of the communication thing, and I think the Stearns communication is about the role or the up and down, or maybe, you know, they were bringing them back for. Mendoza's bluntness, I think, plays into bedside manner. You know, these are things that the Mets will have to evaluate. And look, Mendoza's got to have a good season. I'm not saying he has to win a championship, but they're 30-33 on June 18th. You're probably looking at an in-season managerial change, similar to what they did to Willie Randolph. You know, it'd be funny because Willie was on the top of the world when the Mets won 97 games and were a few innings away from a World Series in 06, and less than 2 years later, he was out of a job, and he's never managed again. It changes quick on a dime. This town will kill you as quickly as they raise you to the rafters. You know that. They bring you up, and they tear you down quick. And Mendoza may learn that the hard way. So everything here is things that I think you're hearing that you kind of knew. Now it's a matter of, can they make it work? And that's what playing the games is for. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break, wrap up mailbag, and then say goodbye. We'll be back with more right after this. All right, we're back. So as I was in the break, one thing I thought was interesting that I didn't bring up in the last segment with Ottavino was how he talked about how Senga, and the part about Senga was interesting. And he had a lot of interesting stuff to say, even about Vientos, about how Vientos focused on the wrong things when he got called up, and how Senga is too much about his mechanics in his head. There was a lot of interesting pieces to that conversation he had when he brought up the Mets, because he went through the whole National League East. And I think that, unfortunately, and this was going to happen because of his comments with Nimmo and the captain, and the whole comments about Mendoza and Stearns and the pitchers, that's what got the most play. Listen, if you have time, and it's a long segment, you could fast forward through the other teams if you don't want to sit for 2 hours listening to talk about all the National League East. Listen to what he said about the Mets. There's a lot of little nuggets in there. I thought the Vientos nugget was interesting. I thought that the Senga nugget was interesting. I thought there was a lot of interesting things here. So let's get to your, and a lot of it looks like in the chat, when I put out the chat thread, I've addressed a lot of what you guys want, but I'll still give you guys a little shout out. But our friend Paul wrote to me, and I'll start there, over on TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And if you want to send me through the contact form a question, if you feel more comfortable that way, you can do that too. So you go to TalkingMetsPodcast.com and you just go to Contact Mike and, you know, general inquiries, and I'll read your comment on the air, or to me personally, I'll follow up if that's what you want. So, hey, Mike, I follow you on Substack and Twitter for years now. Love Sunday's podcast. He's talking about last Sunday's podcast about the Far East. Jim Allen is an excellent resource. Great eyes, my friend. Also, this website looks great. Thank you. I'm not reading this to get myself plugs, but it was nice for Paul to say that. Have you seen the recent report from Ryan Stanek that when he performed poorly, he'd get death threats? He claimed it was people betting. They lose big and then threaten Stanek. Emmanuel Clase and his colleague just hit for betting, potentially facing up to 65 years in jail, maximal charges to be sure. When will baseball have another conversation about the perverse and net negative effect of betting? Will it come up in the 26 negotiations? How much revenue can be generated by baseball for endorsing and advertising betting? Is it worth the soul of the game? I say no. Deeply troubling. I think that this is always a follow the money trail situation. And unfortunately, look, I've had Underdog, and I think, you know, FanDuel does commercials probably on this show when you open up those commercial portals, you know, when you put the different slots to put commercials. So I'm not one to say I haven't benefited from it, because Underdog paid me over the summer to do some plugs. I think the prop betting on pitches, and I'm not a gambler. I do fantasy baseball, fantasy football. I play Stratomatic. Sometimes I'll play. I mean, my Stratomatic leagues are free. They're all for bragging rights. We don't put any money down because that's just not what it's about for us. It's more about fun. I think that these prop bets on pitches and, you know, how many hits you get a game, how many strikeouts, anything that you can bet on failure is a dangerous road. Ultimately, my first thought when gambling was introduced, legalized into sports, I was like, well, these guys make too much money to mess around. But then you forget about the people around them, nefarious people from different countries and from this country that could potentially put money down and then threaten them, threaten their families. The prop bets was never something that I thought about. I think that that's the first thing that needs to go. The parlays, maybe, that needs to go. I think they're doing this, and I haven't really followed the story that much, and probably I should maybe do a segment on it at some point, but maybe capping the amount of money that you could put down on some of these websites is part of it. Ultimately, if you bet on success or legislate success as being the only thing you can bet on, then there can't be any rigging. And I guess there could be where you know, you just throw a fastball down the middle, but, you know, the other guy hits it, or you make a deal. Like, a lot of things have to happen at that point, you know, with the other team, the other player. Gambling's not going away because it generates money and it generates tax dollars, and we're a consumption society, and we can't stop consuming. And in order to keep our lifestyle the way it is, we need to consume more. You want to complain about it and say it's a bad thing? That's a whole different conversation. We are here. It's not changing. I know some people want it to change. I know politically some people want it to change. The only reason you have this show and these conversations about sports and the kind of money that's being thrown down is that we are in a consumption society where we take the wealth that we have, the tremendous wealth we have as a country, wealth that's probably unimaginable when this country was founded, and we throw it onto stupid stuff because we have too much of it. And you want to say that that's part of the problem? I'm not here to argue with you on that. I do think that we have to figure out where gambling fits, that you can put controls in place where what Clase did doesn't happen, where what happened in the NBA doesn't happen. And as soon as gambling became as easy as a click of the button on a phone, which it is, we probably should have known that despite the immense wealth that these players have, not all of them have it. Not all of them have the mindset to understand how it could go away. And there's a lot of bad people that could easily compromise you or your family. I mean, what are you going to do? Even if you're the most upstanding player out there, if somebody loses money on a game and, you know, they go and they say, hey, you know, maybe your wife is somebody that I need to harm. What are you going to do? You know, it's a horrible, you know, think about what you would do at that point. On a broader level, the negative, hostile interactions that happen on social media are horrible. I've been angry at players. Look, I've been accused when I've said, you know, people are immature, selfish, losers. I'm talking about them in the sports aspect of their world. I don't talk about them. I've never talked about them personally. Now, if I think somebody is immature or selfish from a playing perspective, that doesn't mean they're a bad person. They could be the most generous person with their friends and family and community. That doesn't mean they're a generous person as a player. So I don't personalize or, and I certainly think family is off limits unless they get themselves in the fray. I mean, you know, why go after them? They didn't do anything. It's the downside of social media. I think a lot of it has to do where people have emotionally tied themselves in a unhealthy way to some of the sports. And the best advice I could give people is this. If you get to the point where sports, politics, anything becomes so agitating to you that you're about to do something like that, then it's time to take a break. And I think the best thing you could do, and I personally do this, and if you notice, you know, unlike some other people that do these kind of things, I'm on it, I'm involved, but I'm not living and dying on it because I've learned as I've gotten older, you need to have some interest outside of the team. You need to have some interest outside of the Mets. You need to have some interest outside of sports. You need to try to round yourself up as much as you can. Too much sports, too much politics, too much sports talk, too much political talk, too much of anything is no good. And I think that's part of why, Paul, you see what happens. So again, I go off on tangents. That's what I tend to do. But it is what it is. So Steve wants me to talk about how the Mets need to move on from Brandon Nimmo here. And hold on. We got some breaking news. Hold on. So just coming across the wire here, and this is what's going to happen. So here's where you got me saying don't trade Brandon Nimmo. Looks like the Mets have traded Brandon Nimmo to the Rangers for Marcus Semien. So I apologize here. I'm going to have to take a quick break here out of this, do a little bit of research, and I'm going to have to put a stop to the mailbag because, Steve, you got your wish. Here I went on, and I talked about the whole, you know, don't trade Brandon Nimmo, and now we're trading Brandon Nimmo. Look at that. So anyway, let's take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this. Fucking knew that was going to
happen. 7-0, and now Semien crushes a ball. Back to the Gurriel out of the wall. Goodbye! It is a rout in game four. Marcus Semien came into the game with 3 RBIs this postseason. He's got 5 in 3 innings tonight.
All right, so a Talking Mets first. Welcome back. I had to kind of recalibrate here. We're in the middle of our mailbag. I'm ready to wrap up. I'm talking about gambling. I get to a question from our friend Steve, really a topic that we hashed out throughout the second segment on the show about trading Nimmo. Here I am saying I don't see it happening. He's got a no trade. He's still a productive player. And then I get a alert. That's why you subscribe to Mets Fix, because our good friend Jeffrey Ballone alerts my cell phone as I look over. And I see, when I see Jeffrey Ballone pop up at this time of the year, I knew it was news, and I was hoping it wasn't something that I had to redo the show. And sure enough, Brandon Nimmo gets traded for Marcus Semien. And I mean, look, first reaction, I don't really care for the deal, because I think Nimmo's a better hitter. Semien's a good glove. He's making, you know, 3 years left. He makes about $26 million a year. I think the last year is $20 million. The Mets are sending money over. I don't know how the money's going to work out. The interesting part here is I think this is a precursor to more. And whether that means the Mets are now going to get in on a big outfielder like Kyle Tucker, are they going to get in on Cody Bellinger? That would be interesting. They've got now a right-handed bat, a glove guy in Semien, a guy that had a down year. I think he had a Lisfranc injury. He typically plays every day. I wonder if this is something that you know, they're concerned about. His metrics, I mean, if you talk about bat speed, he doesn't have great bat speed. I looked at his advanced metrics. You talk about Nimmo declining. I have mixed feelings. I mean, this is the end of an era, and I said this during the Nimmo segment. Nimmo's a guy that we've been talking about since 2011. That's a long time since Alderson had just taken over as GM. You know, he's a player that's a good clubhouse guy. He's a great guy with the fans. The fans love him. He's a model citizen. You know, he's a guy in the clubhouse that I believe young players could look up to. He's a longtime Met. You know, he may not be the same player that he was when he was an elite run creator in 2022, and he does have 5 years left on the deal, which at $20 million per, not a terrible contract, but could potentially create some logjam on payroll, and does create, his contract does create some bottleneck in the Mets potentially improving the offense. And the Mets want to, you know, improve the defense up the middle. Well, they did that with Semien, who won a Gold Glove. And a guy who is great range, a good defensive infielder, has pop. Is he a guy that could still do 25-100 and hit left-handed pitching? I don't know. But, you know, it does address the run prevention part. And I think more importantly, it is a precursor to more. So here I am telling you throughout the show that I don't think the Mets are going to do a lot here other than trading, re-signing Pete and Edwin Diaz and trying to find a solution at second base. And I was thinking maybe trading McNeil and doing something a little bit down the rung in terms of second base here, maybe a Brendan Donovan or something like that, but he probably would cost a lot. And here there's breaking news on the show. From a surface, I'm not crazy about the deal because I like Brandon Nimmo. I don't mind bringing in a glove at second. Second base is one of those premium positions that you want to have an elite glove. I don't think he's the hitter that he used to be, Semien. It's been a couple of years since he's been that hitter. What has entailed, he had injuries last year, but what has entailed his decline. He's got a sub-700 OPS the last couple of years. Why? I mean, that's a question I would have. You know, just doing some basic, you know, scouting here and looking at, you know, his, you know, it doesn't show me anything. You know, he's an elite worker. He's a clubhouse presence. You hear nothing but good things about the guy coming here into New York. You know, he's a great defensive player. But why has the offense declined so much? And he's got a reasonable 3 years left, but are the Mets taking this player, potentially a player that's declining and being more of a glove going forward and giving the Rangers a better offensive player, and the trade-off is the Rangers absorb the salary? If that's what they're doing, then it makes sense. And then the question is, does Cody Bellinger become more of an option? Is now what I said earlier in the show, Kyle Tucker, more of an option? Do they know Pete's going to get a big deal and they're going to be moving on from Pete, and this is a precursor to something else? So there's a lot of questions, and now the Mets offseason became that much more interesting on after this deal. Now, does it change my opinion about passing and the rumors and all that stuff? No, it doesn't. But, you know, this is as much of a reaction as you're going to get because, you know, let's be honest, we have a lot of questions that we don't answer to. The money being exchanged is one thing, because that will make will tell you a lot about why they made this deal. And what we will do is we'll wait for more to come out, and then we'll probably have a follow-up Marcus Semien reaction podcast at some point late, you know, probably tomorrow, maybe, you know, Tuesday morning, we'll see. But, you know, what we thought was going to be a sleepy leading into Thanksgiving. I said, you know, you're probably all saying, why do I listen to this guy? He's a dope. This is very rare. This is very rare. But I think that the reason it's happening so soon before the holiday is because I think this is a setup trade for more. The Mets address a need at second base with the glove. He can maybe hit a little bit, maybe not like he used to hit. They shave payroll to open up flexibility, and they trade a very popular Met that I have to tell you, they better have something big, because if you're going to give up a popular Met like Brandon Nimmo and still a very productive Met, a guy who hits lefties and righties, a guy that drives in 95 runs, hits 20 to 25 home runs, you know, wants to be, you know, big in the clutch, then you better have a good plan. And it looks like the Mets are going to try to shake this thing up, and David Stearns is going to make this roster his roster. And what does this mean? Anything's on the table. I wouldn't be surprised if they say goodbye to Pete. Would I be surprised to say goodbye to Diaz? Maybe. I think anything's on the table now. I think that what this deal tells me is that David Stearns is ready to be bold and ready to make this his organization and ready to do some big things. And they may be things that make us uncomfortable, because this certainly is a trade that makes me a little bit uncomfortable. Not the most uncomfortable, but makes me uncomfortable. I like Brandon Nimmo. It's an end of an era. I think when it's all said and done, when his career is over, he'll come back and probably be a Mets Hall of Fame. You know, I'm not saying his number will be retired, but he'll be in the Mets Hall of Fame. He'll be brought back in good stead, And I think Texas played at Citi Field this year, so Brandon will not get a chance to play at Citi Field this year. But when he does come back in a couple of years, he should get a standing ovation. And, you know, I'm disappointed to see Brandon Nimmo go. I do like the glove at second. And if Simeon could approach the 25-100 right-handed power bat with gold glove at second base, that's a big offensive upgrade. And from what I understand, he's a good clubhouse guy. So, you know, even the better. So I apologize to all of you. I got to wrap up here. Can't get to the rest of the mailbag. A lot of what I saw in the chat room I addressed, and I think the big mailbag position was Brandon Nimmo. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to put this out now. I'm going to put this show out, and then let's see what comes out about this deal, and then let's follow up with another show probably tomorrow night or Tuesday morning. We'll let this marinate. We'll get about 24 hours of information to come out. But first time in Talking Mets history, news broke on the air. If I only had my original plan was to do the show late, I said, let me wait and do the show late. At 3:30, 4 o'clock, I decided to do the show, and this is what you get. Because I wanted to have a peaceful night, watch some Landman, you know, watch a little, Netflix, and here I am now. I got to, you know, and this is what makes this fun. I got to pivot and the best laid plans here. So anyway, want to thank everybody for tuning in to this edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on the new and improved talkingmetspodcast.com. Check out the chat. Subscribe to premium content for less than a cup of, price of a cup of coffee a month. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Let's sit back. Let's see what's next. The Mets have some things up their sleeve. The whole offseason not only kicked off, but a lot of things changed in just a couple of minutes, about 15 minutes ago on a Sunday. Till next time, take care, everybody.
For the